Good afternoon. It's 12:06 and time for Art Centric Midday Matters here on WBOY. The time is 12:06, and if you have a question or a comment, 260-452-1185 is the number to call. You can always post on our Midday Matters Facebook page, or you can email us at middaymatters@nipr.fm. I'm Sarah D'Elia, joined in the studio by my co-host, Julia Meek.
Thank you, Sarah. And as we all know, it's the first Friday in April. That means we're standing ready for a first Friday behind the scenes mosey through local art centricity with our favorite arts tour guide, Steve Penhallow, and he has quite an itinerary today. We'll be talking with the Fort Wayne Dance Collective's Allison Gerardo about the creative powers of their annual guest artist program, and that would be Kegwin and Company this year. And joining us by phone for this conversation is the troupe founder, Larry Kegwin. We're excited about that. And after that, it's the faces of Haiti in Steve's sights and the story of creative women of the world's amazing and ongoing journey. For this, Hope Sheehan and Laura Liverly will be at the microphones. But first, as we look forward to each week, Sarah and I have a quick pick art tip to suggest. We know you can't possibly keep track of everything art-centric on the local weekend scene, so we like to uncover a hidden gem or two. And what's your quick pick, Sarah?
My pick is something that's going on this Saturday. Sunny Taylor is going to be playing at the Dash Inn, which is at 814 South Calhoun Street, if you've never been there before, right downtown in Fort Wayne. And she's going to be playing at 9 o'clock, and that's Saturday at the Dash Inn.
That sounds like a wonderful, fun concert in a fun venue, and I am suggesting jump in the celebration of National Poetry Month. The first Friday readings at the One World Cafe at the Three Rivers Food Co-op will be a very special presentation. It's a reading by two of this area's foremost artists. That's George Calamaris and Omawale Ketu Olajuwa, our own spoken word guru here on WBOI, and that is tonight at 7:30 p.m., the Three Rivers Food Co-op and Natural Grocery in their One World Cafe, and that's at 1612 Sherman Boulevard. It's free and wonderful and guaranteed to be a really good time. In the meantime, and now directly, it's a joyful ride we're taking cross art centricity with our fearless tour guide slash leader, Steve Penhallow. Welcome, Steve. And how's the view in your neck of the art-centric woods?
Sunny and gorgeous. Beautiful vistas.
And everything's in motion.
Yes, and everything's in motion, as it always is. Yeah, absolutely. We have with us for the first half of the program, Allison Gerardo, who's the outreach director for the Fort Wayne Dance Collective. She's talking about their annual guest artist program. They have Kegwin and Company of Manhattan coming in this weekend for a performance on Saturday and a master class. Is that also on Saturday, that master class?
The master class will be next Friday, and then the performance is next Saturday.
Fantastic. And we, how long has this guest artist thing been going on? Because you've had some fantastic people in over the last few years.
Yeah, the guest artist residency is really one of our signature events that we do throughout each year. We've been doing it since 1989 and brought in a host of dance companies from all over the world.
Mm-hmm. And we have Larry Kegwin on the line, who is the founder of this 10-year-old company. Is he on? Hey, Larry.
I am. Thank you for having me.
No problem. So let's talk all about this fantastic group. Exciting. What is this program you guys are going to be bringing into Fort Wayne on Saturday?
So yeah, the program is a little bit of a retrospective of the Kegwin classics and also some brand new works that were choreographed this year. The program consists of five dances that are very varied, a lot of variety in song and in temperament. The first work on the program is Love Songs, which is exactly that. Think Aretha Franklin, Nina Simone, Roy Orbison. And then following that is Seven, which is a more not as narrative of a work, but equally as compelling. Following that is Boys, which is a suite of four Eartha Kitt songs, a little jazzy. Intermission, hopefully a cocktail. And then following intermission, Girls, which is a companion piece to Boys, and that's to Frank Sinatra songs. and then ending the program with a finale, a new work titled Triptych, which is also abstract in nature, but very entertaining.
That's fantastic.
Larry, we have posted a video of your wonderful dancing, some samples of that on our Facebook page, and we encourage our listeners to go there. But for folks that might not have seen your work before, can you give us your own description of Kegwin and Company?
Yeah, I think that the work that we create is an extension of the personalities of all the members, and I think it tends to be very theatrical, dramatic, witty, accessible, entertaining, and rooted in contemporary dance.
We agree.
Larry, what was the idea when you started this 10 years ago? I always wonder when people sort of launch a new dance troupe or theater troupe, what were the forces that were pushing this thing? What were you reacting to? What did you want this to be that was different than some other things that you were seeing and similar to some things you were seeing around?
Right. I mean, I think the initial seed was really just to put on a show.
Right.
I think of myself and the person who helped me start this, Nicole Wolcott, we're showmen. And we were really interested in just showcasing our choreography.
Right.
And then one thing led to the next. And the success of one show allowed us to put on another show and another show. And so the company was really formed as a means to maintain to maintain putting on a show.
Right. How did you go about finding the dancers initially? What were you looking for?
Oh, they were, it was really homespun. You know, the dancers in the first show 10 years ago were my friends. I was 30 at the time, and these were dancers that I was working with in other dance companies and, you know, just gathered my friends and created choreography and voila.
Mm. Tell me a little bit about your background. I seem to recall a bio that mentioned that you had some MTV experience at some point. Tell me a little bit about that.
I came to dance relatively late. I had a little bit of a gymnastics background, very recreational, and sort of discovered dance in high school. And I was that person at the Halloween high school dance that had to dance.
Right.
The reason I went was to dance. And before long, I was taking some technique classes, and then I noticed an ad on the television to audition for Club MTV with Downtown Julie Brown, very 80s.
Yeah,
and,
absolutely.
Took the train 2 hours into New York City, auditioned, got the gig, and started filming that. And ever since, I feel like my career has straddled pop culture and contemporary dance.
How do you incorporate pop culture into it? I mean, and do people, I don't, this is maybe an ignorant question, but do people in dance ever react badly when you sort of mix things up that way? I mean, is there, you know, are there purists out there who are like, no, don't do that? Or
I mean, I'm sure there are, but I believe that the dance field is very wide in scope and there's room for everybody and every type of creation.
Right.
To me, you know, the pop influences, one, can come in through the music.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly Aretha Franklin is a pop artist. And then also, I think, through the vocabulary that the dancers help create. The dancers are all also very much grounded in the pop world. Mm-hmm. But, you know, some of them, all of them are very highly trained as well.
Right, right. Do you start with the music? I mean, is it songs that you like and then you start to see movement?
Primarily, there's really no rhyme or reason. Each creation is very different. But
right.
If I was to pull out one common thread, I would say that we always start with dance. We improvise to any music just to get the motor moving.
Sure.
And so we're creating dance, and then we test drive it to a bunch of different songs.
Right.
Or if we're working with a new composer, we test drive ideas. So it's really a means of trial and error, and I try and trust my instincts and find a hook.
Right, right.
This is WBOI's Friday, very art-centric Midday Matters, and we're enjoying a conversation with Steve Pennello as our tour guide with Larry Kegwin of Kegwin & Company and Allison Girardo of the Fort Wayne Dance Collective. And that is because we have the good fortune of having Kegwin & Company coming right here to Fort Wayne. And so I have a question, actually, if you have a question, by the way, you can certainly give us a call at 260-452-1185 or post on our Midday Matters Facebook page. We'd love to hear from you. But to Allison, and then it will be indirectly to you, Larry, since this has started, so all of a sudden Fort Wayne had a chance to experience Palabolas, which was a phenomenal thing for right here in the Midwest to have such a dance troupe come through. Allison, okay, from 1989 when it all started until this year, and now we have Kegwin and Company, another fantastic dance troupe that everyone is so excited about having come to Fort Wayne. What kind of an impact does that make on the city?
It makes a huge impact. It really allows the general public to have the experience of seeing all different types of dance forms. We've brought in a huge variety of dance companies with different styles. And I would say one of the largest impacts it makes on is current dancers, especially our outreach programs in the community, Southside High School dancers, Weiser Park, Memorial Park, Northside High School dancers who would never ever have the opportunity to see something like this and who are so passionate about dance. And for them to go to the masterclass or see a lecture demonstration or come to the performance, it really inspires them to see dance not in the limited scope of television that they're used to seeing it in, as a career path. It doesn't just limit itself to just dancing. There's a lot of things you can do with dance as a career.
And Larry, what about the troupe? Of course, you live to dance, and you, I'm sure, love to tour, but how do these concerts and these interactions impact your dancers?
Oh, we all really, really love it. I mean, there's a sort of separation from stage to audience, but when you're teaching a class or mixing and mingling with community, you're really getting a more hands-on experience. And I also think, in terms of for the local community, that life is a series of introductions, and this is an introduction for some people to dance. The dancers and I always like to say that every show is equally as important, because there might be an audience member out there that we inspire.
Great.
Hey, and yeah, let's speak to that a little bit. I mean, when you travel, Larry, when the troupe travels, do you feel like you're sort of ambassadors for what you do? I mean, you know, you're going out to communities that are kind of varied in terms of what the general exposure to dance might be. What do you feel like you're sort of disseminating this form and what you do, and kind of educating people and inspiring them, you know?
Oh, definitely. I think that the dancers and I, we have a very friendly approach to contemporary dance, and hopefully one that is quickly engaging.
Right.
It's very, really important that people understand us and that we understand them, and that's a two-way street and also a learning curve on both ends. But, you know, it's our passion, and we want others to enjoy it.
Right. And I've heard that the troupe is very collaborative. Speak to that, because I'm guessing maybe that's not always true of a dance troupe, the dancers have as much input as maybe they have in your troupe. Tell me a little bit about that.
Oh, yeah. We work very collaborative. I lean on the dancers to develop a lot of the dance vocabulary, the movement, and we begin each process of creating a new work with creative assignments. And so hopefully with that we are excavating personalities, and they're bringing so much of themselves, and I find that is very rewarding, because it highlights everyone.
Right. I read a number of reviews and some interviews that you've done in the past, and people, journalists and writers, often remark about that your disposition is very positive and funny, and I don't know what that says to the usual dispositions of choreographers, but tell me a little bit about that. I mean, do you feel like you have a different sort of energy that you bring to it?
I think so. I mean, that I can only thank my parents.
Yeah.
I mean, I, it's not something I try to do. It's just how I am. However, the more coffee I have, the more that disposition changes.
Right.
Especially on a premiere day. Currently, we are in Greensboro, North Carolina, and we're premiering a new work this evening.
Oh, wow.
And so things are more tense than usual. But for the most part, we don't want to take ourselves too seriously.
Sure. Where now? Tell me a little bit about this new work that's premiering tonight. We're not obviously going to see that in Fort Wayne, but what is this?
One that is I love doing. We have a bolero project where we use Ravel's 15-minute bolero,
sure.
And we set it on different communities, and it's completely unique in each city, in which we use community members, predominantly non-dancers,
right,
and maybe 50 to 100 community members. And over a 2 or 3 week period, we create a new bolero about that community with the community.
Right.
And so Bolero Greensboro is premiering this evening.
I'm old enough now that where I remember bolero from the movie 10, Blake Edwards 10, where it was described as, you know, this most sensual or sexiest music that it was ever composed. Tell me a little bit about what you do with it. And that's probably a misapprehension. But
oh, No worries. It is such a classic and recognizable piece of music that the way that I wanted to put our own imprint on it was to work with a large volume of people,
right,
and to really have a demographic that is a direct example of the audience. So we often cast 2-year-olds to 80-year-olds,
oh,
animals,
great.
And we've had cars on stage, bicycles, and,
that's awesome.
You know, everything but the kitchen sink, basically.
That's great.
And hopefully that it becomes a mirror,
yeah,
for the audience.
That's wonderful. And I imagine the people who take part in that, it's just such they never envisioned themselves being in that situation. It must be so rewarding and exciting.
Yeah, I think it is, just to see something go from nothing to something,
right,
in the course of 2 weeks. And they all costume themselves and bring so much of their own personality to the stage that it's a tremendous community builder.
That's great. How many dates do you play around the country versus sort of in the tri-state area there?
Oh my gosh, that's a good question. I'll have to get the graph out. I think that's I don't know. I'd say like we're out of town with shows 2 times a month. So what is that? 24 gigs out of town.
Right, right.
And currently I'm you know, also working in the musical theater world, which is wonderful to have this yet another wider audience.
Now, what are you doing? Tell me a little bit about that.
Oh, I'm not sure I'm allowed to release it, but I'm working on a new show.
Uh-huh.
But previously, I did the revival of Rent, the musical in
New York. Oh, okay.
And also a show in San Francisco titled Tales of the City.
Oh yeah, based on Maupin's.
Yeah.
So that's great. Wow. I'm trying to think. What else? What should we cover here?
Well,
do you have anything to ask, Allison? You haven't spoken to Larry.
Allison needs to ask Larry a question that she's always wanted to and never had a chance to.
Let's see. Oh gosh, put right on the spot. I would just. I guess I don't have much of a question, more as just. Well, maybe I do. I guess the question I usually. Usually when guest companies come in, I like to set aside a moment or two to actually talk to the company director personally and just connect with them. And that's one of my personal favorite parts of a guest artist residency,
because
I get my personal time with a choreographer. But I guess my question would be for overall dance, just Larry, how do you see the transition of modern dance turning into this more contemporary style? How do you feel about that, and what do you think that means for the dance community in general?
Mm-hmm. I guess I could think of it as fashion. You know how fashion goes in and out of style, and bell bottoms might be popular in 2 years from now, that there's going to be this constant ebb and flow and evolution of what's popular in dance. I guess in New York, I see a trend towards more dance theater becoming very theatrical and maybe experimental. But like I said earlier, I think there's room for everyone, really. And then there's, of course, the whole advent of a lot of dance on television, which is very popularized and competition. And to me, dance is such an incredible art form to communicate. And I would say everybody, when they're dancing, whether it be alone in their room or at a disco, it's an endorphin rush and an adrenaline rush, and I think it's so incredibly healthy for our public to be dancing, and how social it is and the power of communicating is what I really enjoy the most, and I'd rather leave the competition on the back burner.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
What is the difference, Larry, between, I mean, you continue to have a hand or a foot and a leg in musical theater. I mean, obviously, when you're choreographing for musical theater, you're sort of trying to conform to someone else's artistic vision. But tell me a little bit about what the differences are, you know, sort of choreographing for your own troupe versus doing, you know, a production like Rent or Tales of the City.
Oh, my gosh. Well, usually for my own company and my own work, I am really the one holding the paintbrush,
right,
and making all the final decisions. And in the theater world, you are collaborating much more, even with, obviously with the director, but with costume designers and set designers. And the performers are so multifaceted. They're singing, they're dancing, they're acting. But the primary focus is storytelling.
Right.
And so everything should be driven by the story and by characters telling the story.
Right.
So it's a much more specific focus.
Larry, my dream question to ask Larry Kegwin would be, of course you do, you're in so many, a variety of media and subgenre and everything else, and you're busy, and it sounds like it serves you well and you love it. If you could add another component, another medium, take it another step, without giving us any spoilers, what would it be?
Great question, Barbara Walters. I'm really interested in film.
Uh-huh.
And I'm hopefully within the next year or two going to make some short dance films. I just think it's interesting how the camera can really direct the eye, whereas in the theater, I have to leave it up to the audience to direct their own eye.
It's interesting, and your work does represent so well on the YouTube and the various ways we can watch it recorded now, and of course, lacking the vibrance of a up close and personal performance. Yes, how exciting would that be? I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but we have just a few minutes, and so I would like to hear from Allison and Steve, and of course yourself, some parting words. I'd also, Allison will remind us of all of the details, and I would like to welcome you to Fort Wayne. Is the first time, will it be the first time for your troupe to be here, Larry?
Yes, that's true, yeah.
Well, then I hope that you love us here in the Fortland as much as we love you. And thank you so much for joining us. Allison, will you give us all the details of the performance?
Yes. The performance will be next Saturday, April 13th at 8 p.m. at the Arts United Center. You can buy tickets through the Arts United Arts Tix box office, and the number for that is 422-4226, or you can go online at tickets.artstix.org. And there is also a master class. There are only about 25 spots, which have already started filling up for the master class. And that is at next Friday, April 12th, at the Dance Collective Studios at the Hall Center at 437 East Berry Street. And you can call our number at 424-6574 to sign up for that master class.
Fantastic. And Larry, I'm going to give you the last word. Is there something we haven't mentioned that you'd like to mention quickly?
No, just that there's nothing to fear. Bring your friends, your family, and enjoy the ride.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for taking the time. It was fascinating, and we look forward to having the troupe in town tomorrow.
Thank you all.
All right. Bye-bye.
This is Northeast Indiana Public Radio, and you're listening to Midday Matters here on WBOY 89.1 FM. And support for Midday Matters on WBOY is provided by Reinbold and Anderson, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC. Take the guesswork out of your retirement plan. More information on Reinbold and Anderson on the web at reinboldandanderson.com. And support is also provided by United Way of Allen County, ensuring children and youth have opportunities and skills to succeed in school and life. UnitedWayAllenCounty.org/education. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back with more of Art-Centric Midday Matters in just a few moments.
On Fresh Air, you'll hear conversations with entertaining people like Nancy Cartwright, the voice of Bart Simpson.
I gave him one take, one sound, one voice, and that was it.
Blah, 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 blah.
And Matt, his eyebrows went up, his tongue came out of his mouth. He's like, oh my God, that's him, that's Bart, that's him. You got the part.
The most interesting people in show business tell their stories on Fresh Air. This afternoon at 1 here on WBOI.
Good afternoon, I'm Sean Beter with WBOI News. A federal magistrate assigned to handle a gender discrimination lawsuit filed by the former chancellor of Indiana University, Purdue University, Fort Wayne, has recused himself from that case. Magistrate Judge Roger B. Cosby issued an order Wednesday asking that another magistrate be appointed to handle Michael Wartell's federal lawsuit against the university. The Journal-Gazette reports today the early stages of Wartell's suit will now be handled by Magistrate Judge Andrew P. Radovich, who works out of the district's Hammond office. Wartell's suit alleges that Purdue University's trustees forced him into retirement in 2011 because of his gender. He was forced out under a Purdue policy that requires university executives to retire at age 65. Purdue replaced Wartell with 64-year-old Vicki Carwine, who assumed the chancellorship of IPFW in September. The budget proposal unveiled Thursday by Indiana Senate Republicans creates a new Major Moves Trust Fund aimed at helping pay for significant transportation projects in the future. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brandon Smith has our story.
The Senate GOP budget contains more than $200 million in road funding to both state and local governments in each of the next 2 years. It also puts away $400 million to begin saving for projects such as the completion of I-69 and making I-65 and I-70 six lanes wide across the entire state. Senate Appropriations Chair Luke Kenley, the budget author, says the trust fund is about getting the process started.
The cost of all these projects is so big that sometimes you don't know where to start or how to start. And so my thought was we need to make a commitment, and I felt like we could afford to do the $200 million a year for at least this next biennium.
Though Governor Mike Pence wouldn't comment specifically on the Senate roads funding proposal, he notes his proposed budget includes more than $300 million for transportation funding.
We're very much of a mind that roads mean jobs and believe that increased road funding by definition should be a part of a final version of this budget.
However, Pence's proposal funds roads by siphoning money from state budget reserves. Kenley says he thinks it's better to use permanent general fund money. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Brandon Smith.
And Fort Wayne's police chief says he believes the victim of the city's latest shooting might have known the individuals who killed him. Authorities Thursday identified the victim as 17-year-old Elijah Freeman of Fort Wayne. He was the 15th homicide in Allen County this year and 10th since the start of March. Police Chief Rusty York says the teen was gunned down Wednesday after being chased down an alley by at least two suspects who fired upon him. York says the shooting occurred in a southeast side neighborhood that's fairly quiet and not prone to gang violence. You're listening to Midday Matters Art-Centric here on WBOI.
Welcome back to Art-Centric Midday Matters here on WBOI. The time is 12:35. If you have a question or comment, join the today's conversation at 260-452-1185. Email us at middaymatters@nipr.fm or post on our Facebook page, Midday Matters. I'm Sarah D'Elia, joined in the studio this afternoon by Steve Penhallow and Julia Meek.
Thank you, Sarah. And it is a First Friday tour of all things art-centric we're enjoying today. Tour guide for the adventure, Steve Penhallow. So we know we're going to enjoy the view. And his next planned stop is See Wow, Creative Women of the World, welcoming Hope Sheehan and Lorelei Verlee.
Yeah, thank you very much, ladies, for coming in. You have a something called the Faces of Haiti benefit that's happening next Thursday. First of all, tell me a little bit about Creative Women of the World. What is this organization?
Creative Women of the World is an organization that works with artisans in developing countries who are rising out of extreme poverty, mm-hmm. or have been victims of human trafficking, or have been involved in a disaster in some way. We help them create a small business. Mm-hmm. We teach them how to do it sustainably, and then we have a store where we market their products for them.
Oh, fantastic. What was the impetus for all of this? How old is this organization? And you started it,
year
right?
and a half old, okay. And we have a store downtown, okay. 125 West Wayne.
Oh, wonderful.
And we've been delighted with the reception that Fort Wayne has given us. It's been fantastic.
That's great. That's mm-hmm. great. So tell me about this particular event. There was what you're raising money for? What here?
We I went to Haiti. Lorelei said we have to go to Haiti, Hope, and I said okay. So I rallied the troops and wound up going down to Haiti, and I met some amazing people in a community. And one of the biggest needs is prenatal care and artisan development, predominantly focused on the care of women in that community. And so I said, I have some resources in the form of birth workers and midwives and nurses that have a call and a heart to this type of work. And I said, I would be back. Mm-hmm. So I'm on my way. And
you ladies do make it sound so easy, and I know it's a labor of love, and that cuts through a lot of the hard work and planning and everything else that goes into it. I would like to remind our listeners that this is a very art-centric Midday Matters edition because it is Friday. It's First Friday. Steve Penhollow has joined us to be speaking with the CWOW women and hearing about their latest events. If you have a question or a comment, please give us a call at 260-452-1185 or post right on our Facebook page, the Midday Matters Facebook page. And in the meantime, Steve, carry on with the tour and let us know all about, the faces of Haiti.
Well, but paint a picture for me of this clinic. What is going on there, and what do they need, and that sort of thing.
The clinic is actually it services 35,000 people on a mountain. There are two workers.
Right.
One of them's an RN. One of them's training, and so they are doing the best they can.
Yeah.
But one of the most vulnerable things they have to deal with are women that have complications from childbirth or the process of having a baby. And this was a statistic that was staggering to me, is that a woman dies unnecessarily of preventable disease every minute.
Mm-hmm.
50% of those are childbirth related. So that's what we're trying to do. And so in the process of working through this, I met this fantastic woman named Rebecca Hubley. And we were interviewed on PBS, so I'm going to give a shameless plug to public broadcasting in general, because you were really kind of the Kickstarter for the whole operation. And out of that, we immediately bonded and knew that we had to do this. So she had an exhibit at Huntington University.
She's a professional photographer.
And she makes the most amazing photographs. They're vivid. They tell a very specific story about Haiti. And the story she wants to tell, and it's one that I can testify to, is that the general public has this the conception that people in extreme poverty are the little children with the swollen belly and flies in the eyes. And that's not been my experience. Yes, they are extremely resource deprived, but there's great dignity. And so Rebecca really captures that. There's a great contrast in her photographs. And when you enter, the first photograph you look at is the one where she's actually in a 5-star resort looking over a barbed wire fence into kind of the slum areas of Haiti. And that's really what it's about. There's extreme contrast between extreme wealth and extreme poverty. And so she captures that, and she runs you through kind of what looks a little bit stark, black and white photography. On the far wall, it's kind of an emergence of life after the earthquake. And then on the third and fourth wall is an extreme splash of happiness and color and the vibrance of the children that live there. And that's been my experience, you know. You become more honest with yourself and with other people, because you understand where you come from and where they are, and that there's really some very unifying things, and not everybody who is poor is unhappy. mm-hmm. and not everybody mm-hmm. who is wealthy is happy. Mm-hmm. So it really kind of draws attention to that. And we didn't get to see it when it was in Huntington. And lo and behold, here comes Rebecca. Mm-hmm. And she says, well, I'll just put it here.
Right.
So we have this beautiful space that lends itself.
A wonderful venue upstairs at our location.
Sure.
And it allows us to have art exhibits. We're having a wonderful band playing up there. I'm going to let Hope tell about that band. Mm-hmm.
So out of this, you know, I just open my heart and I ask people as I meet them in this fantastic guitar player, a singer-songrighter group, Lee Miles and the Illegitimate Sons, mm-hmm. have offered their time and talent to kind of support the event and draw mm-hmm. attention to it. And he was very enthusiastic, and he's got quite an ensemble, and everybody can come. So then we knew we were doing the right thing by incorporating him into mm-hmm. what we were trying to achieve. So I'm so excited about him.
Yeah, he's a fantastic artist. He really mm-hmm. is one of Fort mm-hmm. Wayne's treasures. Mm-hmm. Tell me, what I think a lot of people, you know, interestingly, as often happens, there's a tragedy in the world, and the eyes of the world are focused on that area for a certain amount of time. And then people get distracted by other things. And what is the situation in Haiti now? I mean, how are they faring after that? You know, such a event that occurred.
What's amazing about Haitian people is their amount of resilience. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They have one of their greatest. They have all of these great proverbs that we mm-hmm. celebrate in the shop a lot because mm-hmm. Lorelei did a ton of work in Haiti, mm-hmm. and they say behind a mountain is another mountain. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what they say.
Yes. Yes.
And mm-hmm. the terrain of Haiti lends itself that way because it's just one mountain after another. They're used to. And to a certain degree, it's a little sad, but they expect a little bit of strife and they know how to handle it. So, you know, corruption or disaster is, you know, day-to-day fare. They just pick up and move. And that's one of the beautiful things about that country. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're resource-deprived, but you're never going to get someone more resilient than a Haitian.
Exactly.
Absolutely true.
It's such a beautiful country as well, as you pointed out, and certainly Rebecca's photography mm-hmm. points it out, and they have had such a hard way to go. Now, I understand that you ladies at CWOW certainly look for that around the world. I mean, the beauty and the need around the world and then do something about it. It. Mm-hmm. On that note, Lorelei, you have been in Japan since...
Yes. I just got back from Japan, and that was my childhood home, so I was really visiting friends. But actually, the place where our family used to vacation every summer was up in the Sendai area mm-hmm. where the tsunami happened mm-hmm. 2 years ago. And I actually got to work with some women up there who are survivors of the tsunami, are still living in temporary housing, but they have found a wonderful business that they've created using the shards of pottery that have washed up on the shore. Mm. They take those pieces and make them into spectacular jewelry.
They're gorgeous.
And we're featuring them on our website.
Oh, that's great. Mm-hmm.
I must say I did spy that and think it was great. And mm-hmm. Something, literally and figuratively, you bring art centricity or help the cause along internationally and nationally.
Yes.
What kind of an empowerment? Of course, these women have businesses and they mm-hmm. can survive and survive well in some pretty harsh circumstances, but especially creating art, what does that do to their psyche as well as their financial outlook?
Yeah, we really believe in the power of creativity. And lots of times when people think of creativity, they think of it as, you know, being artistic, but it isn't necessarily that. It is being able to look at something from a different perspective. So no matter what your circumstances are, if you see yourself as a victim to those circumstances, you will never have change. But if you are willing to look at the possibilities, then there are lots of ways that they can rise out of, as I said, the poverty or the human trafficking and so forth. But we find that by creating a business that is based on making things, they can actually find that beautiful creativity that brings them out.
What is the what are some of the women of Haiti creating? I mean, what you know, I think people don't always know what the sort of dominant folk art is in a particular country. What's going on in Haiti?
Well, where we go visit, we do what we call asset-based community development, which means we go and we kind of survey what the skills are. And in this particular area, and actually in a lot of rural communities, hand thread working was really incredible. So the ladies up there make the most incredible hand embroideries. They look like they're machine done, but literally they're done with a needle and thread in the darkness of their little tiny homes. Mm-hmm. And they're gorgeous, and they really mm-hmm. have a pop and a vibrancy. Everybody does that up there. And then what Happy did, or Haitian Artisans for Peace did, with the assistance of Lorelei's designs, was to really make them distinctive. So we could identify that as a Happy product. You could see, oh, Happy made that embroidery because of how it was designed, the subject matter, how it related to their mission, and how it elevated their ability to do that. They also do basic bookbinding. And that is with, we don't encourage the use of paper. However, in Haiti, they have a tremendous amount of cement bags laying around everywhere. Mm-hmm. And so we encourage them to come up with something to use that. And they came up with a journal. So they do, they pedal sew the bindings mm-hmm. of cement bag journals, mm-hmm. you know. So they're using that. That's one of the things that we try to focus on, is a triple bottom line, which is the planet, the people, and the,
protecting their profit.
And protecting mm-hmm. their profit so they can keep things sustainable. Mm-hmm. So,
what are some of the, similarities, and I can guess, and you've been describing them, but what are some of the great, big, memorable similarities of all the groups that you work with, no matter what country and no matter what kind of misfortune or oppression or under development?
The best thing I can say, and this is what I hope the whole world gets to experience, is that they are so overwhelmed by the fact that someone would take the time to go up and care about them. Mm-hmm. That is the absolute most moving thing.
Mm-hmm. And then we also find that wherever we go, when we are able to work with women, we see significant changes happen in the community. And that has been so amazing to us. Now, that was our vision, but we didn't know for sure if that would be true, but it has been. And we find that if you really get a woman who is in a teachable frame of mind and wants to make a difference, she will literally change her entire community and the world.
And is the impact lessened or extended because many of these women would not have known they had a chance in their lifetime, perhaps in their daughter or granddaughter's lifetime?
That's exactly right. Access is the biggest thing. As Hope was saying, they're very smart, survivors, resilient, but they don't always have access. So if we can provide access for them in terms of training, in terms of showing them how to buy things in bulk, for one thing, so that they can keep their pricing down, and then give them access to a market that is bigger than what their local little market sometimes can sustain.
Right.
That's
right.
Been a powerful thing.
Hmm. What? Tell us about the store and what other types of things do you have there, and what can people find there? And I'm encouraging everyone to go in themselves, but
Thank
tell
you.
Me a little bit about
Thank
that.
You. We actually have products from 29 different countries now.
Oh, that's great.
We are only working directly with the artisans in 5 of them, but in the others we work with organizations that mm-hmm. work with the women, so that matches our purpose. But we have some beautifully made things. I think that's the thing that people are most delighted with when they come in, because everything is so beautiful, so unique, mm-hmm. so, the fact that it's handmade, you know, it actually is very one of a kind in many cases.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And they're just overwhelmed. Mm. And then the prices are really reasonable,
yeah,
too,
sure.
because we are able to work so closely. We shorten that distribution chain.
Right.
And it actually makes the artisans benefit better.
Right.
And our customers are able to get it at a reasonable price.
Right.
Right. And we really, what we've understood and why we think people are so receptive to what's happened is that we truly believe people want a kinder version of consumption.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They want to know that they aren't going to hurt somebody by buying the shirt.
Exactly.
They want to know that what they're doing is helping somebody. And so when you purchase these products, because we actually can tell you the stories of all of these places and these organizations, we know how it's helping them. Mm-hmm. And we know these people. That's not an experience that a lot of people have when you're mm-hmm. out shopping or you want to buy a gift for somebody. You typically go to a box store. So it's a unique experience that I think people are really ready for.
Mm-hmm. And each product has a story tag attached to it so that yes, they can read that and see how that person either designed it, how they are benefiting from it, you know, just all of the story of who made it.
I've always been fascinated with people who make art with found objects, and yes. it sounds like this is, it's not only that, it's recycling, it's yes. You know, and then when you have an object that is used that has a previous history, yes. that tells a story too. And
absolutely.
It sounds like every one of these things really has a story to tell, whether it be pottery shards or cement bags or whatever. It certainly
they
tells
really
the
do.
Story of the people who
And Hope just lifted up a bag that we have from El Salvador, and it's actually made from the inner tubes of tires, and you can see that some of them still have the patches on them where the holes were.
Wow.
Yeah. That is,
that's great. That looks like somebody, you know, sort of thought about it ahead
yes.
of time.
Yeah.
It's just too clever. And mm-hmm. also, we do have pictures and connections on our Facebook page to this wonderful CWOW organization, but after the show we'll have to get a picture of the recycled inner tube bag, because mm-hmm. that's really quite something.
That's great. That's fantastic. And now we can't, obviously Rebecca's not with us, but let's, I understand that one of the trips she made, she was looking for the birth mother of her adopted son, or is that, did I get that correctly?
Yes, that is correct. Mm-hmm. Rebecca felt called to make that connection with the birth mother of her adopted son Jonas, and on the way she's got an artistic eye and a very good point of view, so she took these pictures while she was there. And her family has been going to Haiti for as long as she's been alive, so she really feels like part of her is really a Haitian national. Mm-hmm. And you can't get a better co-team leader than Rebecca Hubley for a mission like this. Mm-hmm. So she has a very grand appreciation for the dignity of the Haitian people, and she is living to try to uphold that message. So mm-hmm. she's quite amazing, and I can't wait to see what other work she comes up with.
And as a professional photographer, she's able to assist our team that is also going to do a documentary.
Oh, that's
so
great.
So we're so excited about that possibility.
You mm-hmm. you ladies certainly all have that multitasking capability in anything. I haven't heard a single story about it that doesn't have yeah. multitasking. And here's a question kind of on that line. As you say, that the natal pre and post mm-hmm, care is mm-hmm. so vital in
yes.
many world round, especially
yeah,
in
sure.
Haiti. Dollars and cents, how much difference does $5 make? I mean, mm-hmm, what can mm-hmm. you do? The monies that you raise and the things that you do, how are you going to be impacting people there?
What I think is unique about the work that Lorelei and I do is that we directly carry the funds literally mm-hmm. to those organizations. Mm-hmm. So we know exactly where every dollar goes. This particular money will go towards helping pre and postnatal care. So for $600, you can take it's a full year of care mm-hmm. for a mom and a new baby. Our goal, we started small because, again, I mean, you know, you want to make things attainable. I mm-hmm. promised the executive director we would be able to get two women up there, mm-hmm. two women through the full care cycle. So mm-hmm. $1,200 will take care of two women for a full year. Mm-hmm. That's additional. What that money goes towards is prenatal vitamins, basic blood pressure care, kind of observing what's going on with their pregnancy. And then after the baby's born, if there's any complications or trouble with infection and what have you, that takes care of that as well. So it's all kind of encompassed in that. Plus, our two medical workers up on the mountain, Fabi and Yolan, that goes to help pay them, because it really is literally a labor of love for these people too.
Mm-hmm, sure.
And there's only two of them, and they take care of 35,000 people. So it's an amazing feat.
Yeah.
But they handle it with grace. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they're just amazing.
They're women.
Yeah, they're women. Yeah. So that's what the money's going
to. Norma and I are feeling a little lonely.
Yeah. I'm sorry to exclude
you. That's all right.
We hoped you'd feel.
I'm used to it.
We hoped you'd feel honored for being a
I do that's feel honored. Right. And, I'm an honorary CWOW woman.
Yay.
Yeah, right. With I am. Just a couple of minutes left before we have to end this session, why don't we have a real quick recap on all of the fun that is going with this particular fundraiser for the worthy cause that we have been talking about.
So we are highlighting the artwork of Rebecca Hubley to lift up the dignity and respect of the Haitian people. She's graciously offered that on April 11th at 6:30 to 9:30. The shop will be open so you can support all of our artisans that we support. We are going to be listening enthusiastically and supporting Lee Miles and the Illegitimate Sons.
It's easy to do.
Yes. I am so excited and so blessed to have his support. Mm-hmm. And we are trying to raise money for prenatal care, artisan development work, and, you know, cover some basic expenses of the travel. Mm-hmm. And what Lorelai and I talk about all the time is we don't want a lot. We just need enough.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
It's a real quick question. Rebecca's artwork is going to be up in the shop how long?
It will be launched that night,
right.
And then it'll be up there for a month.
For a month. Mm-hmm. And is anything mm-hmm. that she does, are there prints available?
Yes.
Or, okay.
There will be prints available for sale that night,
okay.
And she's using that toward the cause as well.
Okay, mm-hmm. Fantastic.
Mm-hmm. What a worthy cause that is. Mm-hmm. And really, we are going to have to go quickly, but I'm just going to ask our tour guide, Steve Penhallow, to give us a last word on art centricity and maybe a guideline for art centricity for this month.
Oh, wow.
CWOW.
Use the warming weather to make yourself enthusiastic about all wonderful art-centric things going on in Fort Wayne. That was just off the top of my head, and usually it just that's not a good place to go for anything.
So. Well, Julia, why don't you give the who, what, when, where of your art centric pick one more time?
I would love to remind folks that they can actually, another worthwhile month-long celebration is National Poetry Month, and one of our favorite poets in the area, that's George Calamaris, has done so much in publishing and in teaching at IPFW, to be sure, and he also hosts and spearheads the first Friday readings at the One World Cafe at the Three Rivers Food Co-op and Natural Grocery. And this coming first Friday, that is tonight, it features George and Omawale Ketu Olajuwon. He is the voice, one of the voices of our own Spoken Word Cafe. That's happening tonight, 7:30 p.m. It is a free offering, and we hope everybody will celebrate National Poetry Month.
And my art pick was Sunny Taylor's gig that's coming up this Saturday at the Dash Inn at 9 o'clock. This is Northeast Indiana Public Radio, broadcasting from the Matt Rothschild Studios at 89.1 and HD Channel 1, streaming online at nipr.fm. This is WBOI Fort Wayne and WBKE North Manchester, a service of Manchester University. We're coming up on 1 o'clock, and Fresh Air is up next.